Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everybody out there in Radio Land. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. You are listening to conversations about sex, love, pregnancy, childbirth, and parenting. My name is Janice Barcelo, and I'm going to be your host for today. Thinking of everybody and wishing them a very, very happy holiday. And I have an incredible guest with me today. For those of you who haven't heard of her, her name is Janelle Martin. And Janelle is in the midst of creating one of the most important films probably of the century called The Other Side of the Glass. And the film is a birth film for fathers dedicated to really taking a close look at the father's experience during childbirth. And Janelle's been interviewing a bunch of different dads, and especially dads whose partners have given birth in hospitals, just to get a real sense of what their experience is, and finding out there's quite a bit of alienation happening there, and grief as well. Janelle is also really, really knowledgeable about birth trauma. She's an attachment therapist, and she calls herself a baby keeper. So her focus is on preserving the spiritual journey of the spirit into form and keeping the soul's journey into the physical experience as the focus of what is happening during birth. So her work is incredibly important, and I just want to get her on as quickly as possible. Janelle, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much.
You bet. We are so happy to have you here today, girlfriend. So, hey, I understand that this is a really important day for you. Do you want to share a little bit about what today is?
Well, today is the fourth birthday of my grandson, Andrew, whose birth is featured in the film. And it means a lot to me to be talking to you about this today.
Yeah. So for my audience, I just want to share that the birth of Janelle's grandson is what prompted her to start making the film, The Other Side of the Glass. So the experience was pretty profound, and I had your daughter on a couple of weeks ago, and she shared a little bit with me about what it was like as a 12-year-old filming the birth of your grandson. And right. I just wonder if you would be willing to share a little bit about your experience about what happened during his birth. And
I would love to, and I want to go back a little bit to say that I actually had the plan and the dream to make a film before his birth, and that goes back to about 5 to 6 years ago. And because of my work in birth trauma, I had this idea to do a film, and I wanted to film. It was going to be really simple. I wanted to show hospital birth babies and then home birth babies, and it was going to be a film about the baby's perspective of birth, because we forget in our society that it is the baby's birth. It's not the woman's birth. It's the baby's birth, and it's her experience of birthing the baby. And I'm getting really radical about that. But my film started out there, and so I wanted to show, like, and if anybody's been to a home birth, they know how true this is, that you can tell by looking at the babies how different their experience is. They're peaceful. They're looking at their mothers and fathers, and they're taking in the environment. And the hospital birth babies are clenched up, and they're their fists are clenched, their faces are scrunched up, and they're crying and pushing away people. And I wanted to go back and forth between those two because I wanted to create like an this cognitive dissonance within somebody when they're watching it, so they go, whoa, there is something to this. This has to make a difference when there are these two extreme experiences. So,
indeed.
and so I had this seed of this dream for about a year and a half, and then I was going to go to my grandson's birth, and it was a vaginal birth after a cesarean. And in the state that they were in, it was in Arizona. There were the usual VBAC kind of issues with midwives, and the father was more concerned for her safety, as many fathers are. I mean, fathers are very concerned for their safety, so they're the ones who often want to go to the hospital. So it was a hospital birth, and so I had this idea that it was going to be like a hospital or a home birth in the hospital, that this would be part of the film, but it certainly wasn't going to be the feature, maybe. It was just going to show the middle ground. Like, so you can take this experience of the home birth babies into the hospital. And my daughter was prepared for birth, and what happened was a totally different situation. It was a very horrible experience for Andrew. And as you said, Mariah was the videographer, and she was 12 years old, and we think that probably the kid factor was in our favor because she was able to get a lot of footage that I think other people would have been prevented from getting if they were adults. And she was right in there with the camera. There was a lot of movement and activity, and she got a lot of people's backs, and then it'll switch around and she'll get right in there. And so the consequence, we've got some really awesome footage of his birth and showing his experience. I'll take
a
breath.
What was your experience?
I was connecting with, a year and a half before that, I had gone with them to interview the previous doctor, his new midwives, and some home birth midwives. And so I was sort of in connection with him before he was even conceived, and I was in connection with him throughout his gestation. There were some really troubled spots for my daughter relationship-wise in the last trimester, and I was with her on the phone almost every day across the country. I went out one time to support her, and so I was always communicating with the baby, with the soul. So in the middle of the night, about 2 or 3 in the morning, she had decided to get an epidural because it was going in, you know, it was going on maybe 12, 15 hours, and she was really tired. And I was really concerned about that because, as we know, in the natural birth field, we have the belief that the cascade effects of interventions often lead to cesarean, and my daughter was just so determined that she was not going to have a cesarean, and that was because of how horrible it was. She's not in the natural birth movement at all, but she's learned a lot from me, but she did not want to have a cesarean because it was so horrific for her. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I was pretty wiped out, and I went out to my car where my little Shih Tzu dog was, my little healer dog, and I cried and cried and cried. Then I went and ate a big, big protein breakfast, and I went down to the chapel, and I was praying, meditating, dozing, and I kept hearing, "Be my silent witness. You have to be my witness, and you have to be quiet. This is my birth." And it's bizarre, and, you know, some people will think it's really bizarre. People who communicate with their babies before will really get this. But at some point, I agreed to do that. I mean, I was gearing up to be protective of my daughter and my grandson at this point. So I agreed to do that. And then at around 6 in the morning when I went back up, I was like a mute. The doctor finally came in after about 18 hours, and she said, "Do you have any questions?" And I went, "No." And so throughout the process, I was being a witness for my grandson. I was using the skills I know as a birth trauma therapist, where we sit in very deep, wounded places and holding my midline as best I could in a really traumatic situation. But I was witnessing for him. And then we have the camera, of course, which is a huge witness. But there were some very, very traumatic moments. My daughter had wanted to have him in her baby in her arms because of previously the baby had been separated for 5 hours. And her husband had to have a big fit to get the baby in with her. So she wanted the baby to be in her arms. She knows about self-attachment, the breath crawl from me. So she wanted to have the baby crawl and attach himself. And she had requested the cord clamp be delayed, and she had requested that there be minimal touch of her baby. And in the end, it was almost as if they took her birth plan and went, checking them off. Nope. You know, you could just hear the group laughing, like, she wants what? Yeah, right, we'll see about that. Because she got the exact opposite of what she wanted. And from the moment he was suctioned on the perineum and with a bulb, and then he was suctioned by the doctor before putting him up on her. The cord was clamped within 3 minutes. The doctor said it had stopped pulsing, and she started the cord clamping process, and she basically told the father, here's how you do it, and put the scissors in his hand, and he had to do it. And then the doctor rips the baby away. My daughter is fighting. She's got this little wet baby, and that she doesn't want anything but to have this baby in her arms. That was big, big, big for her. And this doctor is prying, like, takes her hand and, like, flops it over and pries the baby out of her hands and takes him over to the warmer. And at that point, I follow the baby until his daddy could get there, because men are often very torn. They want to be with, well, their instinct is for the three of them to be a unit. And so when the mother and baby are separated, they're torn. So I stayed with the baby until he got over there. And for 5 minutes, they suctioned this baby. And you can see on the video that his father is saying, 3 or 4 times, can we give it back to mama now? And every time they do that, it's almost like the nurse suctions even harder. And at one point, and I'm not going to say what it is at this point, she's very, very verbally abusive to the baby. And it's as the father's saying, gentle, please. And then again, after that, he asks again, can we give him back to mama? And when it appears, every time it appears that they're done, he says, can we give him back to mama now? The nurse, sticks her finger in the baby's mouth and gags him and checks his gums and says, no, we have to make our assessment of him now. And at that point, the resident who was doing some of the suctioning pushes the father's hand away from the baby's leg and just starts twisting and doing some sort of exam. And then this went on for 5 minutes plus, and then it continued with a second nurse coming in and doing things, and then they wrapped the baby all bound up. And, you know, I have an image of this nurse taking the baby while the father is sort of standing there waiting to take the baby, and she just looks at him and then moves on, and she presents the baby to my daughter. And then they continue to bulb this baby for another 20 minutes with the blue bulb. And I have images of, like, repeated. Every time they bulbed this baby, it added up to 2 minutes. 2 minutes of bulbing. And, you know, and the research shows that bulbing on the perineum does not help. Suctioning does not help. And there's absolutely no purpose in bulbing this baby for 2 full minutes. And every...
I would love to interject here because
sure.
I saw the clip, and what I know is that your grandson was raped. Absolutely, this is a rape.
Orally raped.
Orally raped. Yes, orally raped. And your daughter, who was begging them not to take the baby, I distinctly recall her cry.
She was crying. It was like, it was
leave the
sobbing.
Baby in her arms, and they took it anyway. You know, they took it anyway. So there's just incredible violence and abuse and aggression in that clip, in that video footage. And I think it's common. You know, I don't think this
common.
Is a rare event. Yeah.
This is why a lot of hospitals will not allow you to film.
Yeah.
They don't want you to see what they're doing. But then the other side of that is that this woman, well, you've seen the clip, so you know how violating she is, even verbally, or psychologically.
Yeah.
She knew that she was on film. The camera was right in her face. These people knew that they were being filmed. This tells you how little regard they have for this baby, first of all, that they're doing all these things, and it's perfectly normal. And like the mother crying, no, as they pull the baby away out of her arms. She's trying to hold on to the slippery baby. And they know they're being filmed.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's several layers of this. One of them is that I'm wondering what your daughter's birth was like. You know, when you did you give birth to her in a hospital, and could scenes of what happened during your grandson's birth have been a recapitulation of what happened during her own birth? Because sometimes we play that out.
No, I think it's the father's birth. The father's birth.
You want to share a little bit about that? That's really significant because I know there's a good number of women right now who are doing
work,
you know, to prepare themselves for birth.
They're doing the work, and the
trauma.
Father doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The fathers haven't been willing to. It's not that they're not willing. I think it's just that they don't understand the significant role that they're playing during conception and gestation and at birth. And so they don't feel as compelled to prepare, perhaps, because they don't. They really, you know, our culture has relegated them into the periphery somehow, as if they're not important. And so why should they do the work? Why should they do any work if they're not going to have a consciousness about the importance of their part? That's
right.
One piece. But I, for all the fathers that are listening, and for the mothers as well, for the future parents, I'd love for you to just describe how you think this might have been a recapitulation of Andrew's father's birth.
First, I want to say that what you were just saying is true, and then the next level of that is what the part four of the – there are four parts to the film, and it's going to – I don't know how it's all going to come out in the story, but the film is about healing men. And because I've had this question as I've gone into births, and I've seen this happen where men just stand there. And it happened to me as a birthing mother. I've seen it happen to my daughter. I've seen it happen to people that I'm attending a birth, and I've dealt with it in birth trauma healing where the man freezes up, and there's no place else anywhere where he will allow these things to happen to his family, but he's frozen in the hospital. So this was my question that started to emerge as I went out on the road in 07 to start filming fathers and experts in the field of pre- and perinatal psychology and midwifery. I was asking, I mean, the question found me more than me, you know, more than it coming from me. I was asking, like, what is going on here? And I believe that the experience that I've had that we're going to talk about here later with Andrew's father is the answer. And it is that when baby boys are born and they are induced, and they are drugged, and they are separated from their mother, and other people touch them, and even if it's a home birth with the midwives are handling the babies too much. They're suctioning. It's not indicated by science. They're putting hats on the baby. They're rubbing the baby. People need to leave their hands off the baby. So I'm losing my train of thought here. I'm getting kind of scattered.
Let me interject here for a second about why the fathers are freezing, because I have a very clear understanding of this from my from my years of studying birth trauma, and that is that the nervous system has several different possibilities for the way it's going to respond to a threatening situation. One of them is called parasympathetic shock, which means that the nervous system will freeze, and so will the personality that's attached to that nervous system, because that is the defense mechanism that was used early in life by that same being to survive. And when we're talking about what's going on, especially with little boys when they're born, and 8 days later perhaps, or maybe immediately after their birth, a piece of their penis is being cut off, mutilated, genital mutilation,
tortured.
Sexual violence, and sexual abuse of the highest order is happening to our boys, causing their nervous systems to stop, to freeze, in order to survive, because it's the amount of pain, of stimulation that's coming into the system is overloading them. And so that's the only way for the system to deal with it, is to freeze. There's other options. We can fight. That's been my option, right? That's my nervous system response is called sympathetic. So I'll tend to lash out, you know, I'll just snap. And a lot of people do that too. They just completely, you know, snap and go after people. So this is from trauma. This is a response to trauma that we all have. We all, you know, have a different preference, the way our nervous system typically responds. But a normal response would be to be able to deal with it, but sometimes the intensity is just too much. So we freeze, or we run, or we fight. Those are the things that we do in order to keep ourselves alive. And I watched
exactly.
my husband, because I watched my husband do the same thing. I watched him freeze. My daughter was in an ECU unit for 2 months, and I watched the doctor abuse her body beyond belief, that I wanted to rip my baby out of his arms and run out of that hospital with her. And my husband stood there and did nothing. He said nothing. The doctor threatened to have me thrown out because I was given him quite a bit of lip about what he was doing. My husband did nothing, and for years I thought, he's a wimp.
Yes,
it totally was part of the down. That's not it. He's not a wimp. You know what I'm saying? It's not because he's a wimp.
No. You know what he is?
He's traumatized. He was in shock.
He's traumatized. And thank you, because that's where I was heading, was that by the time the baby gets through all this and they're separated from the mother and they're isolated, there's a huge break, and they're wounded. They're wounded from not being able to connect with their mother, from not being able to crawl to the breast. And then, as you said, then they're circumcised. And so most of the men in our culture are profoundly wounded, and it's unacknowledged. It's not acknowledged by anyone. And that's what my film is going to look at. And you're exactly right about the freeze. And, you know, in our culture, we hear all the time about fight and flight. And we are civilized human beings, so we're not supposed to fight, and we usually can't take flight. So there are many, many situations where most of us go into freeze. And men in particular, have to freeze their emotions, because if they felt their emotions, they would have to feel the profound violation of their body, mind, and soul in the first hours and weeks of their life that is just unthinkable. And once people get that, for example, that circumcision is a horrific violation of a human being, a baby who did not choose this, did not consent to it, You totally change your perspective. You totally see you can totally see a human being differently. You can look at this man who's acting out this horrific thing, and you can go, "Oh my God, this man is so wounded, and he can't even begin to touch it because our society does not support it." And that's one of the things I want to come out of this film, is that we begin to look at men and the violence and the separation that they feel from women. They want to have loving relationships. They want to be in connection with the person that they love and that they've chosen to be with. but there's something in them that is activated, and then they act out this violation onto other people.
Go ahead. I would love you to finish that thought. So they're acting out the violation onto other people. This is incredibly,
right.
Yeah. So we're reenacting our original trauma. We're doing this not because we're crazy, but because we're really trying to bring resolution by recreating the events of our earliest wounds. We're trying to get to resolution. And unfortunately, when we reenact these scenes, most of the time they're just re-traumatizing. We don't get to the resolution.
No, we don't at all.
You know, unless we have some tools, yeah.
And I'll just touch on some of the basics of the therapy that I do, which is the Castellino method of birth trauma healing. And that is that every human being needs to have their experience recognized by their mother, if nobody else, their mother, but, you know, even the father and the grandmother and other people, even if the caregivers would to recognize it. But, you know, you can do the adult healing work. And in a group setting, you can have other people, you can go back into your baby brain, your nervous system, where the pre-verbal memory is there, and you can experience it, and you can experience a new experience of it. If you were harshly treated, if you were separated, you can have the experience with adults that you didn't have then. But the most ideal thing is if we would begin to recognize early on what's happening to the baby. When the baby has a story, look at videos of a circumcision. Look at Andrew's footage of being so violated, and he's screaming and crying, and they're suctioning him anyway. You know, stop and look at the baby. Feel the baby. Imagine what the baby is going through. Imagine what the baby needs, the powerless, helpless baby who's dependent on us to treat them kindly and to speak kindly and to have our adult emotions under control when we're in their presence. So that, because babies are like sponges, so if you're angry about work, or you're angry about someone else, and you're just, you know, you're raging around in the car in traffic, your baby feels this. You know, and when we can do that, people should practice this. Next time you see a baby, just sit back and, like, calm yourself and watch this baby and imagine yourself as a baby and what you needed. You know, and so many times that's where, well, I think all the time, that's where our really deep, deep, deep woundings are. And after years and years and years and years of layers, and also years and years and years of living in a family maybe where it got re-traumatized over and over and over, when people got put in rooms and had to cry it out, when they got propped up with bottles of formula, you know, when they got left with lots of caregivers, you know, all of those things, they recapitulate, as you say, the trauma. And so we really need to start getting in touch with, what is this baby feeling? This baby, I mean, look at a baby. The brain is developed. There is no time from conception forward that the brain is not fully functioning for that developmental stage, and it's a continuum of development. So that the medical profession treats humans like they are pieces of meat, and they do that to adults too, but they do it terribly to babies, because they say the baby doesn't remember, the baby doesn't feel, the baby doesn't have needs. The whole concept of the mother-child attachment and how that's core for life is totally ignored, and it's bizarro world. It's totally, absolutely bizarro. That there is no time when the brain development is not happening. What fires wires in the womb, in the labor, in the birth, in the hospital, anything happening to that baby, the baby is experiencing it. That's how we know the brain works now. From the research in the 90s, we know this as a fact. The baby is experiencing something. That's why they put up colorful things. That's why they go do-do-do to them, talk to them, because the brain fires what's happening, and then it wires. And there is, it is a profound, profound, profound time in the labor and birth and the immediate hours afterwards. It's a short, short time, so it gets totally blown off. Oh, it doesn't matter. It matters so much that, I mean, I can't tell you how much it matters. And how much we could change. How much we could change humanity right now. All the things that we cut and drug and try to get rid of, the consumerism, alcoholism, violence, war. I totally believe if we were to put our money and our focus on creating healthy and happy and harmonious human beings from the beginning of life, we could change humanity. And it would require that we treat, it's simple. Midwives even get mad at me because I'm always saying it's the baby's birth, and I'm saying, don't touch them. But you know what? All I'm saying is be kind. Be kind to this human being. This is a soul coming in. This is their first experience. They've been in the mother's womb. They know nothing of the world until the mother, and this is their first experience. And in those first minutes and hours, they are going from being a water being to being an air-breathing being, and all of their systems are changing over the heart, the kidneys, the lungs, everything. The brain is all going through a transition. So
I want to add here that a lot of what's happening in the womb, even prior to the time of birth, and I know I brought this up in conversation with you before, is also traumatic. What the mother is experiencing during the pregnancy is influencing the neurological development and the brain development, the whole systemic development of the baby. And sometimes the trauma that's getting enacted during birth is a recapitulation of the trauma that that child has experienced while
it's
in the womb. Yeah, and there's something else that was popping in.
That takes us back to the father's issues, the mother and the father's issues.
That's where I wanted to go. I wanted to ask you a specific question about this. But I want to stress for everybody that the way that we begin life affects the way that we live it. And in terms of the father's birth, I have a person in my world right now who's having an experience of dealing with what I call the annihilating feminine energy, where his lover, ex-partner, wants to kill him, wants to hurt him, and is willing to hurt her own child in terms, for the purpose of getting back at this person. So he's dealing with the annihilating feminine. And when we look at Andrew's birth and we see these women, like that nurse, violating, physically abusing Andrew as an infant, what are the odds that this young child, this infant, is going to be able to have healthy relationships? Not only was he taken away from his mother at birth, so unable to bond with the feminine properly from the get-go, from the minute he enters this dimension, but then he's abused by other feminine energies. And very often during circumcision, it's the nurses that are tying these babies down, that are restraining these babies, so that then the males can come in with their, scissor happy hands and slice open the body of an infant.
Yeah, if it was only scissors and snip, snip. Yeah, in Andrew's case, Andrew had a female OB. He had two female nurses in there, a female OB resident, and then he was taken and put over in the cart, and he had another nurse who came in with a male, and at the time I thought he was a physician, but I found out as time went on that he was a resident, because this nurse, this neonatal nurse, was training him how to suction on Andrew, and Andrew did not need to be suctioned. But anyway, there were
what are the odds that this kid, that this young man will ever be able to trust the feminine or to have a healthy relationship with a woman?
Or Janice, a man, his father was impotent. His father was powerless. His father could not, his father became a little baby and could not stop the violence of his child. And the man, the resident, I'm pretty sure was, I'm pretty sure he was a fairly new resident, because he was being very gentle. In fact, I got over to the cart first, and I just put my arms around Andrew, and I wouldn't let anybody touch him until the resident was right there, and he was not aggressive with me at all. He finally kind of said, you know, I need to get in here. So this was a, and you, as you know, because you saw the footage, this nurse was actually retaliating on Andrew because of the behavior of the resident who was not complying with her training schedule. She was frustrated with the resident for not doing what she wanted, and she grabbed it from him, and she showed him how to do it on Andrew. So we have two men who were stripped of their power by this gang of women.
Interesting.
So, yeah, isn't it?
And so, well, I just hope that the women out there are listening to this, because not because we want to blame women for what's happening, but because we want to help women understand why men are having such a hard time making
connection.
A loving connection. Well, women are having equally of a hard time, because we're equally abused at birth. We're equally exposed to trauma in the womb. We're equally exposed to trauma even during conception. You know, a lot of the sex that's happening on our planet is so vile and disgusting, and babies are being made from this unconscious sex. So our very spark of life is distorted, and our capacity to love is diminished because of the way we're beginning life and because we're exposed to such incredible abuse and trauma from the very earliest moments of our experience.
And that's a good point, because I was talking about how we could change the condition of humanity if we were to treat babies differently at birth, and that really does require also that we have conscious conception, not random conception, where couples come together to make a child that is wanted, and that they are prepared to take care of emotionally, spiritually, physically, psychologically, and not this random conception where these human beings are being conceived in all kinds of sad situations, and that is
really
going to be
bad.
Reflected at birth. Yeah, I mean,
It reflects the way that we create our lives, you know, how we, I'm not going to call it programming, because everything can be changed. As you mentioned, you're doing work with the Castellino process. I do work with energy medicine called Jinshin. There's ways to rewire ourselves that we can get on to undo some of this damage. But the healthiest way to approach this and to really change the quality of our civilization is to start educating people before they conceive their babies, so that from the very inception, from the very spark of creation for each being, that spark happens in a context of absolute love and safety and a strong desire to bring that child through into this dimension. You know, not as a, oops, I'm pregnant, and oh, shit, should I have an abortion? All these thoughts, all of these feelings, all of the realities of not being in healthy relationships while we're pregnant, this is all being imprinted on our children. And it's very difficult for mothers and for fathers, I'm sure, to hear this kind of stuff. You know, I've written a whole essay. Well, it is, because many of them have children, and many of them may not have acknowledged what's happened to their children while they were in the womb, or if it is acknowledged at some conscious level, it's quickly repressed, because there's such a huge burden of responsibility, you know, that feeling like, what have we done to our babies?
And this might be a good segue into talking about Aaron's birth.
Please.
Because Aaron,
Aaron being
daughter,
who? Okay.
My daughter, she was my second child, and I was in a relationship that I didn't really want to be, a marriage that I didn't really want to be in when she was conceived. And so I spent a lot of the pregnancy wishing I wasn't pregnant. But at the same time, I loved her, and I have good pregnancies, and I'm healthy, and I enjoyed pregnancy. So that creates a double bind for her. That creates a conflict for her where I love her, but I don't want her. That's imprinted in her. And I had done a lot of work on that in my body and in my body, mind, and soul in my training. And she was 17 days overdue, and she was born in the hospital. And I had been to the doctor that day for the checkup, and he said, you know, this is on a Wednesday. If you don't have the baby by Monday, we should probably think about doing something. And then I was back in that evening because he said I was dilated to 3 later, but he didn't want to say anything. And I got there at the hospital about 6:30, and she was born at 9:30. So from a backache to like at 5 to 9:30, she was born, and it was very fast. Clearly, it was so fast that my legs were shaking for hours afterwards. But during the labor, her father was very, very cruel. I was able to go into the zone. I refused drugs because my first birth was so horrible. But I would go into the zone. Like, contractions were 2 minutes apart. One on top of each other then. But I could doze. But as soon as a nursing staff or somebody would leave the room, he would start calling me an effing bitch. I don't know why you have to have another child, and I should have the doctor fix you like the dog that you are. And I would be get out. You know, I would be in like intense because, you know, it was a quick labor and birth. So it was very intense. But I could block him out and then go within.
A second. No wonder your daughter is in a relationship with an abusive man.
Right.
Oh, my God. This is what's happening during her birth.
Right. And, you know, she and I have done some work around that, and but not enough for her to get out of the relationship. And not, you know, and she's like a lot of women. She doesn't want to get out of the relationship with the man that she loves on some level, but he's not able, like most men, to do his own work. So this film.
Let me say something real quick before I forget it. Okay, mm-hmm. That you say that she's in a relationship with a man that she loves on some level, that what's happened is our wires have gotten so crossed that we mistake the abuse for love. Okay, we think that that's love.
Right, and the way
that
I say that
ain't
is
love.
That, no, the neural cocktail that developed in her brain around love is what I think we're each addicted to, our own neuropeptides based on our experience. And so her experience is very frustrating. And then so throughout her childhood, we had trouble breastfeeding. As a child, she would come to me, and then as soon as she came to me, she'd push me away. So we've had that come here, go away most of her childhood. And then when she turned 18, for some reason, a lot of things shifted in her, and we've had a really wonderful adult relationship. And then I started doing a lot of my healing work around her birth, and she and I have done some healing work. You know, and then
wait. Let me say something else before if we fly by it. The come here, go away, that come here, go away dynamic is also a reflection of what she experienced in the womb with you.
Right.
I love
you,
but I don't want you. Yeah, so let's stress this so people really begin to understand how connected it is to our personalities.
And you can go to all kinds of therapy, and you can even go to attachment therapists, like the reactive attachment therapy, and they don't even consider prenatal or the birth experience. So you're missing a huge, huge piece.
You're missing the pieces.
Yeah,
this is where it starts, folks.
Well, actually, there's a speech therapist in my trailer who worked with Andrew, and that's what he said. Like, you know, if you don't have this piece, then you can't put the pieces together.
Right.
So it's really, really key.
It's the it's when we're getting to the core. It's the deepest work that we can do, you know, to really resolve the challenges we've had in our life, and also to make sure that we're going to do our part to change the patterning. Like to say, the buck stops with me, with this family line of trauma and abuse. I'm not going to continue it. I'm going to do my work before I have a baby. That's one way to end this lineage of abuse. Of course, most of us are not conscious of it, the need to do this. So it's great to be having this conversation.
Yes, and I would, you know, I have said that the buck stopped with me, and then it's been quite a journey of healing, I'll tell you. And, you know, it was very sad to me to see the violation of my grandson, because I really had a lot of hope for my grandsons to have a different experience than my daughter and I had. But I'm doing, you know, I started this film 2 years ago. I went out on the road. I put my things in storage, and I'm doing it. It's so low budget. I'm the production crew, and what keeps me going every day has been that this is for Andrew. This is for Andrew and Andrew's generation. This film has to be made. This information has to get out there so that we can truly stop these lineages of dysfunctions that we have. And so, where do you want to go from here?
Well, I'm wondering too about an earlier comment that you made regarding that this could have been a recapitulation of the father's birth. And you might have said it, and it might have gone right over my head about what you know about his birth and about his early life that may have been also played out in Andrew's early life experience.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about his early life. But the thing is, from the birth trauma healing, you know, we can watch a baby, I can watch a 40-year-old, and I can learn a lot about their birth. I have a feeling that he's experienced some very traumatic violations, and I think that he is circumcised, so I know that that is one. But I really can't tell you. I mean, I don't have the facts, and but I do know. I mean, what it tells me. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, please. I really would love for you to follow your train of thought with it, because the insights.
Well, my train of thought went to the event that happened in the spring that we were going to touch on during the editing process.
Yeah, so we have 11 minutes left.
Oh my gosh, really?
So
I wonder how long.
I
took the footage, and I went back to Missouri, and I didn't look at it for a year because the whole thing was so traumatic. And so a year later, I started the film, and I spent time in their home, going back and forth between Missouri and California and Arizona, a month at a time there, and then to California. And my daughter really wants to heal. She wanted to participate in the Castellino's trainings, and I could never get him to sit down with me and look at the footage. And I could never get him to sit down with me and talk about exactly what this looked like for me, what I was approaching, what I was going to do, even, you know, nothing. And every time there was a day off, and I'd mention it, yeah, but it could never happen. So at some point, I think in March, I left him a DVD of a piece called When Meconium Happens, and it had all this suctioning in it, and it had what the nurse did. And I had at one point asked him early on, do you remember what happened? And he said, not really. And I think that's pretty classic of how men experience this. It's unconscious again. It adds to their experience as a baby, and then it's unconscious again. And so I was very aware of how challenging this was for him, being in the process of doing this film. And last April, he, as I was leaving, he does the same thing to my daughter. He pushes her away, and then when she starts to leave, then he pulls her back in, and they both like push and pull. And so they were in the middle of one of those where he had told her again that it was his house and she had to get out. And so with me there, of course, it was different. And I was very respectful to him because I am doing this film for him as well. He represents all of the men who are so wounded out here. And on a spiritual soul level, I so honor him for showing up in my life and in my daughter's life and fathering Andrew, who clearly has something huge to bring to this world, because he told me in the labor, a soul connection, this is my birth and we can fix anything, but this, you have to be quiet, you have to be a silent witness. And it wasn't until much later when I realized, oh my gosh, he experienced that so that we could expose it to the world. And so his father is just as amazing as a soul who came into our lives and connected with my daughter so that we could all be on this path, just like you are, just like David Chamberlain is, just like Barbara Harper is. You know, we're all on this path to make the planet a better place for human beings. So I really, really honor my son-in-law for that. But he really lost it and began to act out the wounding. And what happened was he threatened my life, trying to protect, I was leaving that day, and he was going to protect Andrew from me. He turned into a baby, the baby who was so wounded. And when children come into my office, they do the same thing. The mother comes in because she wants to know how the child perceived conception when they were separated. Well, the child comes in, jumps on my chair, and jumps off, and the mother's mortified because her child's acting out in the therapist's office. And I'm like, wait a minute, what was your intention? You wanted to find out? And she's like, oh, wow. He had something to do with it. It wasn't my husband. So that's what happened.
Wait. This is important for me to say to you. It's also that with you, he can act out what he wasn't able to act out in the hospital to protect his son. Okay, so that nurse abused his son violently right in front of his face, and he froze. But with you, there was an opportunity for him to actually behave in a way that was protective. And in that instance, there may have been some level of resolution for him, you know, some level of re-empowerment for him, even though you are not the one to be targeting.
Right. And I knew when it was happening, he threatened to blow my head off, and then he went and got a gun and continued to threaten to blow my head off. And
wanted to do in the hospital, you know. That's
exactly
what it would have liked to have done. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But Janice,
which would have been appropriate.
This is the point. I mean, I knew it in the moment, and within an hour of leaving Phoenix, I went, oh my God, he's showing me, this is how angry men are. This is how hurt men are. If he could go back, I have no doubt, because I have treated this man with love and respect, and even more so during this filming, as my heart has gotten softer, and I've thought, oh my God, you know, he is part of this big picture. But if he were to express the anger he had in that moment when that woman was raping his son, and he kept saying, "Can I give him back to mama now?" like he's a child. If he were to act on that, he would go blow her head off. That's what he showed me, and that's men are walking around. As you pointed out, all these women who've harmed the babies in the birthing process.
Yeah.
Men in our culture are walking around with the deepest, most profound wounding that we could imagine. Men are wonderful beings.
Yep.
They are wounded. This man is a nice man. He's a wonderful man, but he's been wounded from birth too.
That's right.
You know, we have no idea how amazing our men could be, because we've allowed them to be so harmed.
That's right.
And we can change it. And that's what the film is about. And right now they're not allowing me to use the footage of the film because I called the cops and he's facing charges. And they've chosen not to have any communication with me, not even to say I'm sorry. And my daughter, you know, was not truthful with the police. And so it's a misdemeanor instead of a felony. And they got, it's a huge mess. And I still know that this is part of the healing. I set out on a journey to bring healing to my family, and this is part of it.
I there's several things that I just want to share, Janelle, and that is that I want to have everybody that's listening, everybody that listens in the future, to take a moment to just really honor you and to give thanks to you for the path that you've been willing to travel, and to your entire family line after you who've gone through the trauma as well, for doing this work, because you're benefiting so many by your willingness to walk the path. It prevents many, many others from having to walk that same horrifying journey. So I'm in gratitude for the work that you've done and for the work that your family's done. And I just wanted to honor you because we have very little time left, 3 minutes left. I wanted to also point out, if I remember correctly.
I want to say thank you for that.
It's extremely important to see how profound people have been willing to give of their lives in order to support the rest of humanity.
Could I say something? Like, I am not good about doing this, and people are after me to do this, and if people really appreciate it and get it, I could really use donations to continue, because as you know, I don't even have my own home. I gave up my home to do this, and people can make a donation.
How do people reach you, Janelle? Where can people reach you? What are the website addresses and phone numbers, whatever you want to give right now?
Theothersideoftheglass.com, and there's a PayPal link. It would be much appreciated.
So you can reach Janelle at theothersideoftheglass.com. There is a PayPal link if you'd like to make donations in support of the work that she's doing in this amazing film that's coming out. I think Janelle and I are going to be doing a lot more work together because we're both being drawn to focus on what's happened to the men and to bring more attention there and to bring more healing there. We have a lot of women doing the work, and the women need to be met by the men so that there can be healthy relationships. There's one other question. We've got 2 minutes. Didn't Andrew have a problem with speech? You know, we acknowledge that he was orally raped by this nurse, and did he have difficulty talking? Can you say how that played itself out?
Andrew had a speech disorder and an eating disorder. At age 22 months, he was not talking yet. He was hardly making sounds even. So he went to a speech therapist, and they couldn't figure out the source of it. But he also had an eating disorder, so he went through several months of therapy. But he still had not said mama. And he did not say mama until he was 27 months old, and it happened the day after my daughter looked at the footage for the first time. It actually happened the day after the speech therapist interview, because he looked at the footage and she was across the room, and it triggered for her when she was across the room and all she could hear was her baby crying. She got it. And this is all parents need to do. The mother needs to get how it was for the baby, and they get it viscerally. And it's like, oh my God, it was that horrible or it was that blissful. Either one. But once she got it, the next day, 27 months old, had never said mama, first time.
All right. You know, we got less than 60 seconds left. So I just want to encourage all the mamas out there to please, if you sense that your child has suffered during gestation or during birth, please acknowledge the trauma so that the healing can begin for the entire family line. Just holding hands with Janelle and the rest of everybody who's on the call today, thank you so much for this gathering together of souls. And we bring forth our commitment to do our part to heal. Janelle, we're definitely going to have you back on, and maybe you and I can do many, many shows together, because we've obviously got a lot to share. God bless you all, everybody. Happy holidays. Have a very, very happy new year. Sending you waves of love until next show. God bless to all. Janelle, I love you, sister. God bless you, too.
I love you, too. Aloha.
Aloha.